Welcome back, or welcome to, the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and in this episode, we talk with Ryan Atkins, a professional multi-endurance sport world champion based in Sutton, Quebec. Perhaps best known for his success in obstacle course racing, Ryan has also demonstrated incredible range with success on the mountain biking circuit and in our world of ultra trail running on the FKT scene, just to name a few other disciplines as well. This conversation is broken up into four categories. First, we go deep into what it's like being a full-time endurance athlete. Then we transition into a conversation about the obstacle course racing scene. We go into his philosophy on multi-sport training. We also talk about his experience and thoughts on the FKT scene in our sport before closing out with some miscellaneous questions. With that, let's get started. Ryan Atkins, welcome to the Single Track Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So you only recently came on my radar, even though you've been in the ultra endurance game in many different circumstances for years. This is primarily a mountain ultra trail running audience. So could you give us just a little bit of background on how you got into this scene and like how you've progressed over the years and like where your interests have taken you?
Yeah, totally. Actually, I guess it would date back to early 20s. I was racing mountain bikes kind of full time and cross country. And there's this really cool trail in Northern Ontario, up in Killarney Park, and called the La Cloche Trail. And my buddy was telling me about it. It sounded really cool, but you can't bike it. You had to run it. It's about 50 miles. It's like total wilderness. So as soon as you start, like there's no bail options until you finish. Just really cool trail. And I wanted to do it. So I started running for a few weeks and then we went and did it. And then it was kind of just from there, it snowballed in terms of like, yeah, doing more trails, doing more racing. I guess I got into kind of ultra running there. And then from there kind of went to obstacle course racing and just, yeah, FKTs and things like that.
And one thing we're particularly interested in on this podcast is athletes like yourself that have either made the conscious decision to go full-time or there've just been a lot of opportunities presented to them to go full-time. And you're at that point where like this is like your full-time profession, like you live to train to get that last 1 to 2 to 3% of ability. Can you talk about how that came to be and like what you were doing before that?
Sure, totally. I was actually working as a design engineer, mechanical engineer, and that was cool. It was sitting at a desk, but it was pretty fun work. And my friend told me that there was this obstacle race where if you won it, you would win a brand new ATV. And he thought that I might stand a chance at succeeding. So I went and I did the race and I won the ATV. And that was pretty cool because it was like $10,000 ATV. I sold it and bought a mini excavator, started a trail building company. And then it was kind of like building trails, working engineering, racing. They were kind of all just like competing for my time. And then as I started doing more and more racing, there was just like travel. Weekends were, you know, you'd leave on Thursday afternoon or you'd fly somewhere, do a race, and you'd be back, you know, at your desk on Monday, just totally exhausted and shattered. And after a while, I was kind of like, well, I can make more money racing than I can working, and it's better anyways. I enjoy it more. So just jumped right in.
So the scene you were in at the time, was it OCR? Because my understanding is that in that sport and Spartan, et cetera, there's a lot more prize money on the table. Like by comparison, our big races like UTMB, Western States, et cetera, there's no prize money. Like if you podium at that race, your payout is going to come when you sign a contract with some brand, but it's not going to come from directly from the race.
Yeah. So, I mean, obstacle racing definitely has way better prize money. Like I've won races where I've gotten $50,000, before for the win and multiple times and stuff like that. And, I don't know why trail running has such little prize money. I think it's, it could relate to the fact that a lot of trail races have to cap their entries due to like wilderness permits and stuff, and so then they only have 500 to 1,000 people doing a race, and so the race organizers just literally don't have the money to put out prize money, I guess. But yeah, in like obstacle races, it's not uncommon to have 10,000 participants in a weekend, and, you know, a brand will do 20, 30, 40, you know, plus weekends a year. So it's, I think, a lot more lucrative on the side of the race organizers.
Wow. So does that mean, and again, this is all new to me, so I apologize if these are like entry level questions, but does that mean that there are more folks like you in the sport at the top end who are totally committed to doing it like full time?
I don't know. I'd actually say there might be less folks, but the folks who are committed to doing it might be making, I don't know. Like you said, trail running, it's all about sponsorship, and, some of those sponsors can be very lucrative. Whereas like in obstacle racing, it's probably less so. So there's like less of a guaranteed income stream. But yeah, I'd say it's a big mix.
Again, this is just fascinating to me. I always ask athletes in our sport, you know, why aren't you doing everything you can in your career to make this your one thing? Because I feel like if you're doing this full time, there's just performance advantages that you can get that you couldn't get if you were trying to balance it with a 9-to-5 or even a part-time job. I'm curious if you think that that's critical to do. Like, do you think that being full-time at this has been critical to your success, or do you think that you would have had the same amount of success and prize money, all that kind of stuff, if you know, you were still building trails or in doing that other design work?
I think that's a very weighted question, because you can make it work. You can make working a job. I mean, it's a lot easier if you're working a part-time job, you know, 20 hours a week or something, and then doing your training and your competing. I think that's totally reasonable to work like a full-time job and train and compete. Also still possible, but it just means that like you probably don't have time for a girlfriend and a family and like time for friends, things like that, if you want to actually, you know, succeed at the highest level. Or conversely, like you could do it for a while, but then you might burn out. I think it's like kind of cool, because when you're working full time and competing at a high level, it's almost like a badge of honor, and like there's this kind of like this cool thing about doing that I think gives you strength, and it gives you like meaning within your racing and within your training, because you're like every second is more precious because you have less time. So like you're like, oh, I've got an hour, I better make it count, things like that. Whereas like on paper, it's way better to be full-time athlete, because yeah, you like do your training and then you can focus on your recovery and you can do things like that. But yeah, so I think there's pluses and minuses to both sides of it. But I do agree with you that like it's a pretty awesome lifestyle, and I think if someone has like the talent to do it, that it's definitely worth pursuing at some point in their lives.
Well, not to jinx anything, but again, this is another common concern among top athletes in our sport: the risk of injury. Are you in a position where, even if you got injured, for example, or you were dealing with like a couple weeks off, you have more like long-term relationships with brands so that you can afford to do that and like take the time to properly rehab and get healthy for later in the year or in a subsequent year?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think COVID was a perfect example. Like, we basically earned no prize money last year, and you know, we still had sponsors who stuck by us and during the process and things like that. So that was awesome. So it's really helpful having like a combined income stream between prize money and sponsorship.
Right on. What does a typical day look like for you? Like about this time of year, because I know that you're a varied athlete. You do different stuff in the winter versus fall, spring, and summer. So like right about now, what does a typical day in your life look like?
Yeah, I mean, wake up probably around 7 o'clock, 7:30, get up and have a big breakfast, go over like some emails and stuff like that. And then I usually start training around 9, and most days I'll do like some training on the bike and some training on running. That's pretty typical. I guess I probably bike 6 days a week and run 4 or 5 is like pretty average. But then I usually bike for like about 2 to 3 hours and run for like an hour and a bit. And then I'll do some strength training about 3 times a week. And that's mostly like injury prevention kind of stuff. Things like that. And so after my first training, I come home and I have a smoothie and try to relax and for a little bit before I go out again and do something else. And and then then it's usually like taking care of stuff around the house, like cutting the lawn, fixing stuff. My wife and I own a Airbnb, so like go over there. I was just over there installing keypad locks for those two units. So do stuff like that and then come back home and it's usually always something on the house. It's like I really like bikes, so I'll like spend time working on my bike or like cleaning it or cleaning my wife's bike or doing stuff like that. I usually spend like 20 or 30 minutes a day like just tinkering with stuff, and then it's like time for dinner and we like watch an episode or something as afterwards and go to bed. That's
It
basically
sounds
a
like
day.
you're, yeah, it sounds like you're incredibly diversified. Like, again, the athletes I talk to, they're like, if I was a full-time athlete, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I would finish my run and then I would just like sit on the couch and watch Netflix all day. But
Yeah, there's always kind of something to do. It's actually kind of funny how busy we really are, and especially like with all the like we do race a lot too. So I think a lot of athletes, I think it's less common in trail running and ultra running to like to race so much. So then you would have longer blocks of time at home. But if you're racing, weekend and then weekend, like you only really have like Monday to Thursday. Like Monday you get home and like you do some training. You have like Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe Thursday before you're like going somewhere else. So it's like you still all your tasks and everyday life and emails and sponsorship obligations, they all get condensed into like a shorter period of time. So
yeah.
it is a bit busy.
Because you're a multi-sport athlete, does that mean you can safely train like 30 to 40 hours a week as opposed to a runner who on a good week is limited to like 20 hours time on feet?
Yeah, totally. It's amazing how little runners train, I think, compared to cyclists. And I come from a cycling background where it's like pretty normal to do 20 to 30 hours a week. So, I really enjoy being able to like boost my volume and just like keep it more interesting by mixing and cycling and in the winter, skiing and like fat biking and stuff to the training.
I definitely want to have a much bigger conversation about like your training philosophy later in the conversation, but just a couple more questions on this lifestyle front. What do you see as the pros and cons of your current lifestyle?
I think pros would be just like having time to, I don't know, like explore like what you want to do. Like I don't know, like right now I'm like sewing a frame bag for a friend, and like that takes a fair bit of time, and it's like, but it's like something I enjoy doing. Or like, I don't know, just having this extra bit of time to like pursue other hobbies, I guess, and to delve into that, I think is really awesome. And I think also that people make themselves so busy that they don't actually have any time to like to themselves and to like reflect on things, or even just like time to be like without having like next thing. So I think having like the lifestyle that I lead, even though like I do make myself quite busy, I also have periods of time where I'm able to like I guess decompress and look at the big picture and almost philosophize a bit, which I think is like pretty cool. Cons, I think the con would be just having, well, I mean, you could see it as being pretty stressful because there's like, I don't think I find this because I've been doing it for so long, and because we have like some great sponsors and stuff. I keep saying we because basically it's my wife and I are in like very similar situation. But I could see if you were like, oh, I'm gonna rely solely on prize money, and then you show up at a race and you're like, well, if I don't win, I'm not gonna eat this week, kind of thing, or things like that. So there could be that con to it, as well as just having a lack of like predetermined schedule. I like not having a schedule because I can kind of make my own and then prioritize like what needs to be done. But I think some people kind of might not thrive on that. They kind of need like structure to then like slot things into.
What advice do you have for fellow athletes who are new to this idea of being a full-time athlete, full-time endurance athlete, that are trying to make it in a similar way? Like, they want to live some sort of version of what you've created.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, it's like really important to look at the big picture and kind of like see like what you want to do, how you want to do it, and like plan ahead. It's kind of like a problem. It's like that you have to solve. And so that solution might look like spending time on your training, spending time on finding like passive sources of income, just figuring out how you're going to make it work. And that could mean, yeah, it could mean trying to become like more of an athlete influencer, which I think today, in today's like climate, is very prevalent. There's not a lot of people who are like just racing and who have no presence online. So it's like nurturing that and nurturing relationships, and then just like, yeah, getting after it and making it work for you.
Talk a bit, just to close the book on your background too, talk a bit about where you're based in Quebec and why you choose to live there. Because again, just, I live in this West Coast Mountain West bubble where people think if you want to be like a serious multi-sport endurance athlete, stuff like that, you got to live in like Boulder, Colorado, or Flagstaff, Arizona, or, you know, somewhere in the Mountain West where maybe the weather conditions are more favorable year round. So I'm just curious, like, why you've chosen to invest in that area of North America to live and train.
Yeah. Well, basically we are Canadian, so, it would be, I guess we could get like special person's visas and like move to the US, but, we don't have them. So like we're in Canada. So that limits, you know, Flagstaff or Boulder. I guess we could move to Victoria or somewhere like that. But yeah, I mean, most of Canada has pretty harsh winters. And but honestly, where we live in the Eastern Townships, which is like southern Quebec, just north of the Vermont border. And it's, I don't know, I love it here. It's beautiful. There's like amazing trails and dirt roads. And it's like, it's calm. It's like relaxing. And there's also, I feel like in Boulder or places like that, there's just, yeah, this sense of like not only entitlement, but also like you said, people who live there think that they're like that, like, I guess it's like the Boulder bubble. It's like that is the center of the universe according to them. And it's kind of like refreshing to be somewhere where like you can just go out and like train, and like everybody's super humble, and like there's people who crush out here, but I don't know, they don't, it's almost like more like a united front, and instead of like ultra competitiveness within like that community. So it's kind of like a refreshing in that respect too. But yeah, I guess the weather is like a bit harsher in the winter. Spring kind of drags on for a while. The roads are all like dirt around here, so they just like stay super muddy after like all the snow melts for a few weeks. But I don't know, it's like the ebb and flow of seasons is like always been, I think, like a advantage to training, because it kind of like forces you to switch it up and to have like different focuses as you go along. Yeah, a lot of runners get injured a lot, so it's nice to almost be forced into like different aspects of training.
Yeah, by the way, it looks like you have a pretty sweet like home base setup. Like, we're doing a video interview now, and your background looks pretty sweet. I watched a video, you and Lindsay have a pretty sweet gym set up too. Can you talk about how you've created this home base that's good for training as well?
Yeah, we live like kind of on top of a hill, so our driveway is half a mile long and about over 300 feet of vert to get up there. So I mean, that's pretty cool, because like you can do hill intervals out the front door, or you can at the end of every ride and run, you kind of have this decent sized climb to get home. But then yeah, we've got a gym, we've got like a bike with a smart trainer set up, a squat rack, a rower, a ski erg, and then we've got like an overhead kind of rig with monkey bars and things that you can kind of hang on and do pull-ups. Yeah, it's pretty set up in there, all the stuff. And then we've got a sauna just like steps away outside that you can jump into after. So I do run on the treadmill. Like when I'm transitioning fitness from like bike to run fitness, I find the treadmills like really effective for that. Just because like you can run really fast on it and like work on leg turnover and things like that and not be affected by things outside. So I'll do like specific workouts on the treadmill. As much as it sucks, even like sometimes when it's nice outside and I'm just like, I would much rather be outside, but it's like I'll do my 45-minute workout on the treadmill and then I'll ride my bike afterwards outside. So yeah, it's a great little setup we have here.
And what's it like having a partner who's also one of the very best athletes in the sport?
Yeah, it's great. It's nice to have somebody who understands like what it means to be an endurance athlete and like the sacrifices that it takes and like the selfishness that it kind of involves. So I think we're really good at kind of recognizing that and also giving each other space when we need it to do the things that we need to do. It's like, oh, I have a really hard day. I won't be able to make dinner. Can you do it tonight? Or things like that. So yeah, it's great.
Are you guys on similar training schedules year round, or are you doing different things?
Yeah, similar but different. Our training looks pretty similar. Lindsay's focusing a little bit more on sky running races this year, whereas I'm focusing a bit more on biking stuff. So she's running a bit more in the mountains. But yeah, I'd say our training looks pretty much the same.
Right on. Well, I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about the Spartan and the OCR scene and introducing this audience to it. I know you have some gripes with it too. Like, I think you've mentioned in the past that you got frustrated with how much more running has become involved in the races. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I mean it's not even just running, it's like I guess the type of running. I think that to explain it to most people, like most of the racing that I've done in the past has been basically like imagine a super gnarly trail run or like ultra course, and then just like break it up with like these fun obstacles that you get to do along the way. So like we'll do, or we used to do races that, over 13 miles would have, 6,000 feet of climbing or more, and like off trail, like bushwhacking, running, scrambling, like all sorts of super fun running, like really engaging. And then they've kind of like started to almost introduce more like flat courses where it's more like cross country running, more like just like dirt roads and things like that. And it's just I don't know, to me it's I understand that like you can have a mixture of the two and like try to find and trail running is the same thing. There's like mountain running and there's sky running and then there's like trail
Variations, yeah.
running and then there's like super non-technical courses. It's just like I think that OCR was kind of like brought up on like having more technical, more challenging courses and then, obstacles that like you had to be good at doing in order to make it through. Like and they're kind of like getting away from that with like the intent of having like more people finish, the average person be able to complete it. But I mean my argument is that like there's this North American Elite Series where like that's what I do. It's got most of the prize money and I just think that they should like make those events more difficult and kind of showcase them instead of like trying to water down the entire sport. But
Yeah, what's their rationale for this watering down process?
honestly, I think it's just CEOs within the brand that have it in their mind that like if the events are hard, it'll scare people away and they're just trying to get people to sign up instead of trying to grow the elite side of sport. So it's kind of like there are people within the company that believe in, elite competition and the athletes and like growing that. And then there's like this contrasting group of people who are just all about the bottom line. And so they're always kind of fighting each other and there's no cohesiveness within their decisions.
Which is interesting because if I understand correctly, the sport was born out of trying to recreate like the military training environments and like extremely harsh conditions and believing that people were going to be attracted to that and want to like have that controlled experience in their life somehow.
Right, exactly. And like that is the way it kind of was and somewhat still is, but there's also, and I think it's awesome. I think that people show up, they do an event and yeah, some people don't come back, but some people get their like butts kicked and then they like, it kind of kicks them into gear and it changes their whole lives because now they have this thing that they want to accomplish. That's like this full body, and mind challenge and they'll like, you know, get really into it, which I think is really cool. I think that like having the easier courses will just kind of promote the one and done type of competitor, instead of having like brand retention.
Yeah. Can you also talk about, I think it's relatively recent news, or at least they're contemplating it, separating elite racers from like age groupers and back of the packers. And the reason I ask is because one of like the cornerstones of mountain ultra trail running is that the elites and the everyday runner are on the exact same start line. And there's something special about that. And it sounds like you've talked about being in favor of this separation. So can you talk about why you think that makes sense in that sport?
Well, actually it is the way it is. And it's been that way for a while. So, the elites go off and then the women go off and then 15 minutes later, they start going through age group, starts, and then eventually they get to like the open waves. And, honestly, it's having everybody on the start line is great, but there's an issue with obstacles where you can only get so many people through an obstacle. Otherwise there's like bottlenecking. And that really sucks when you're like doing a race and then all of a sudden you get to an obstacle and you have to stand and wait for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why they do staggered starts. Because if you have, I think they have the heats limited to about 250 people per heat. And then they just go off that way. It'd be great. I don't see any issue like morally or like societally with having everybody start, but it's just a logistics thing because like, yeah, the bottlenecks are real.
And I've never been to one of these events, which is why I have a lot of basic questions, but you mentioned that like you can have like 10,000 athletes at an, or multiple thousands of athletes at a given event. Are these taking place at like ski resorts or like, where are these taking place that you can facilitate that many people? And
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the, like a ski resort is a popular venue to have. Okay. Sometimes it, anything that has access to the outdoors, access to trails, and a ton of parking is basically like where they go.
What's the pitch in your mind to athletes in our sport that have never dabbled in Spartan or OCR yet?
I think the pitch is like, especially if you're a runner who also likes to rock climb or scramble or do things that aren't just like running around in circles on a track, then the like full body challenge and like coordination required is really, it's a lot of fun because you're not just like, yeah, there's a lot of running and the running's hard and like the running's fast, but it's broken up with, you know, a rope climb or a heavy carry or monkey bars, or it just has this element of play in it.
Mm. We're always trying to brainstorm ways on this podcast to improve the sport and the culture, the business of trail running. Is there anything that you have experienced on the OCR Spartan scene that you think would be interesting or worthwhile trying out in our sport that's absent?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Like, what do you miss when you come over to the trail scene that you like get your fill of when you're in Spartan? And it could be competition related. It could be the prize money, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, honestly, the obstacles. when I do a trail running race, I'm like super engaged, really fun. And then I'm just like running along and I'm like, I could really like jump over a wall now, or I could like just do something else for 20 seconds and then go back to the running. Cause I get a little bored of just like, of only running. So that's kind of a funny answer, that obstacles are the thing I miss. But, yeah, I think that the, don't know. I think, like, it really depends on the trail race. But I think having, like, off trail sections could be, like, really fun, where you're like, where you're basically bushwhacking between trails to, like, link things up.
Orienteering,
which is a lot easier to do, like, in the East Coast, where stuff grows back, like, the next week. And, like, out west, they try to stick on trails because you run somewhere and then it's a trail for the next 100 years. But yeah, it's really fun when you're, like, just mobbing through the woods and jumping over down logs and brush and stuff like that.
I want to make sure we have a conversation about your training philosophy and how you approach sport. One thing interesting about our sport, and I'm sure you recognize this all the time, everybody is, like, very narrow-mindedly focused on one discipline. Like, if you're an ultra runner, you're running throughout the calendar year. There's not really any dedicated off-season. Some people talk about it, but I think it's, like, mythical. What do you think you miss out in that process as a high-level athlete when you're just dedicated to one sport to the exclusion of everything else?
I think you miss out on a lot of things. I think you miss out on different forms or different streams of motivation. You miss out on like breadth of training approaches and things like that, because you can learn a lot from what other sports are doing and then take those nuggets to your training or to your sport. I think you also, like, put yourself at greater risk of injury, and you're missing out on just, like, skill acquisition and, like, general fitness, general, like, full body, yeah, like, competency. Because if you are only running, then I don't know, I think the human body is able to do a lot of different things and a lot of different planes of motion. And obviously, like, humans were made to run, but we were also made to run on, like, through the woods and, like, off trail and things like that. And that by running on, like, really predictable surfaces for hundreds of miles, I think it's just, it's a little bit outside of what our bodies are meant to do.
Well, do you think that, like, looking at your own example for a second, do you think, given that you are committed to this multi-sport approach, do you think that you have a longer shelf life as a elite level high performance athlete?
Yeah, I think so, actually. I think not only from, like, physical injury, but also from, like, mental burnout. Cause, like, I'll get really excited about, racing bikes or about, lifting weights or about something else. And it doesn't mean I'm not still running and I'm not still, like, doing the training. It's just, there's, like, another, focus introduced.
Yeah. Well, I know there's got to be a genetic component to this, but you're not spending a crazy long time each year in any given sport. So how are you, what's your thesis on why you're able to perform at a high level across so many disciplines?
I think my thesis would be to build a lot of aerobic fitness and then to apply that aerobic fitness, like, with the right stimulus at the right time, depending on what your goal is. So, say I was training for the Iditarod, which I did on a fat bike in February, which was really awesome, but I was doing, like, a ton of fat biking to get ready for that. And then after that, I had to, like, kind of switch to running. So I had, like, this really big base of, like, endurance, but I didn't have any kind of speed work and any, kind of running. So then I was just doing, like, a lot of running at, like, tempo and above, on, like, the type of terrain that I was expecting to race on, and kind of, like, transitioning that fitness from fat biking in the Arctic to, like, running trails in California as quickly as possible.
Yeah,
things like that.
If I understand, you're in your mid-30s at this point, still at the top of your game. What's been your experience at this point in your career trying to capture those last couple percents of performance gain in training? Like, what are you doing at this point in time, maybe that you weren't doing in your early 30s or your late 20s, to stay where you are at sort of the top of the mountain?
Oh, man, that's, I think, like, so much has changed in terms of, like, how I train, but also so much has stayed the same. It's kind of like, I guess, now I'm doing Now I have like I guess you asked about my thesis before, and like the way I see like running is it's kind of like I was thinking about this the other day. I see running as like three pillars. You have like running economy, you have like aerobic fitness, and then you have like technical skill of like skill of running, like how you run downhills, how you run uphills, and things like that. And like basically, if you like break it down into those three facets, you can kind of see how like to improve your economy and to improve your skill, like you have to run. But by running, you are also like breaking your body down, and so you can build your aerobic fitness other ways. And so like I don't know, if you look at it that way, you can kind of just like apply the right stimulus at the right time as your event is approaching, and then prepare for it instead of just being like, I need to run all the time as much as possible, things like that. And like it's okay to have your run economy like go way down, because with the right stimulus, you could bring it back up. And if you have a better aerobic base and better recovery, then when you do bring the stimulus back up, your body can handle more load in that period of time. So
Now that makes sense. Well, one other question I had there. You mentioned earlier in the conversation that you race quite frequently, and I'm curious, given that, how do you go about the process of constructing like a logical training block where, I'm guessing to you, peaking at certain times of the year is important, and there's only so many times you can stay properly motivated to like go to the well. So how do you think about that?
Basically, I only peak like once or twice a year, but I try to hold a relatively high level of fitness throughout the year. So, like for like world championships or big events like that, I'll try to like set up peaks. But I guess I kind of like set up little mini peaks throughout the season for important races, and then I also just train through a lot of events and races. And that's like what I've been doing for years. And I think there's an argument that could be made that, like, I don't know, you're gonna sacrifice performance at the high end by racing so much. But I think if you just have like one or two events that are really important, you can still do a lot of racing throughout the year. And then like as that event approaches, you can tailor your fitness and your motivation and excitement towards those events, as long as you can switch off during less important events and kind of let your ego go a bit if you don't have a result that you kind of thought you should have, and just like accept it as training.
Well, maybe you've already experimented with this, so forgive me if I didn't do my research, but what do you think would happen if you focused on one sport to the exclusion of everything else for like a calendar year?
I think if I had like a really big goal, I could do that. If like, I don't know, I've thought about like, I think I could do like well at a race like UTMB or something like that. And if I like did something like that, then that might be, I mean, 1 year is insane. I would never do that. But like maybe 4 or 6 months, I could like hunker down and really have a focus. And yeah, I think it could go really well for me.
You're excited
I
about
also think that.
UTMB?
Yeah, I think it'd be a really good challenge. But I also think that there's like this, you introduce this possibility of spending 6 months or a year preparing for an event, and then you get a flu on your way there, and that would really suck. So it's like, I guess I love competing, and I love training, and I love just movement outside, and I get so much joy out of that, that like sacrificing, a year of your time in your prime, what would that be? Like maybe 5 or 10% of your like prime physical ability for one event. It seems risky, but also exciting.
I'm just reminded of this now. I should have asked it earlier, but like one thing interesting about our sport trail running is And I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It's just interesting. There's a lot of like kumbaya in the sport. Like nobody is outwardly like expressing like rivalries with other athletes. I don't know if you watched the Formula One series on Netflix.
Right. Yeah.
I'm curious, like, do you like in the world of like Spartan and OCR and like bike racing, is it more like outwardly competitive? Like, do you have any rivals or grudges and like shit talking, stuff like that?
There's like a few people who, I wouldn't call it shit, like shit talking, but I would say like, yeah, there's like competitive rivalry, but also like, I just don't care at all. I'm just like, I'm just going to show up and race and like do my thing and then going to go home. Yeah, nothing's really going to change that. So I think a lot of people maybe see me as like a rival, or like they might not like me or really want to beat me or something like that. But I just, I've been racing for so long and like, I just don't care. I just want to like do the best I can do that day. And like, just if I can like run a race really well, and I'll be happy.
So you're pretty internally motivated, it sounds.
Yeah, totally.
Are there any athletes in our sport that you pay close attention to or you follow because you find them interesting?
Somewhat. I think that like everyone who I've like had, I guess infatuation wouldn't be the right word, but like a lot of people that I've like thought were cool or inspiring or whatever, I've like come to like meet them or like learn things about them that have like soured the process. And so there's people I follow that I think are like cool or really good athletes, but at the end of the day, I think like humanity and humans are just like so flawed that it's hard to hold anyone on a pedestal for too long.
It's true, man. It's anticlimactic sometimes to like for me to be there on UTMB race week to meet all my heroes, and likewise for them to meet the lowly podcaster that's interviewed them from time to time. But now that's interesting, man. Are you a coach too? So like, you mentioned that like you have like the Airbnb stuff and you do some coaching on the side as well.
Yeah. So, my mental coach and I, we both set up like a training platform called Nox Coaching, which is No Excuses Coaching. And, it's a little bit different from most coaching platforms in that it's kind of like more of like a pathway to learning how to self-coach than like an actual, like do this, do that.
Oh, interesting.
So we have this online platform, kind of like similar to a Facebook, where people can go on and talk about their experiences and things like that. I also post 3 levels of training each week, like a high, medium, and a low like training block. But I really like try to teach the athletes to like to go on there and use that as like a framework, and then through like introspection, hopefully create their own like path towards excellence. And it's kind of like, I just basically asked myself when I was starting, what would I have found most helpful? And it's not having someone say run 8 miles today, run 6 miles today, do intervals today. It's having someone say, you could probably run 8 miles today, and this is the reason why, but if you feel like you should do something else, maybe look into that, and then like reach out to me and ask me, and then like maybe I'll suggest something differently, or you have a goal coming up, and then we like kind of create this destiny.
I've never heard of a coaching business model where the goal is to graduate the athlete out of the process and to be self-sustaining. That's really interesting.
Exactly. And that's kind of ironic, but it's also, I don't think there's a lot of coach-athlete relationships that last for more than a few years, because eventually the athlete either thinks they know enough or thinks that someone else was going to be a better coach, or things stagnate. And so I definitely took that into consideration when I was like trying to think of the best way to educate people and to coach people. Essentially,
Before we get into the miscellaneous round of questions, I want to ask you about some of the cool stuff you've done on the Northeast U.S. FKT scene. You've dabbled in the Adirondacks, you've dabbled in the White Mountains, you've done some pretty cool stuff. Is there anything in that scene that is inspiring you particularly right now to go after, maybe invest some time in?
Yeah, I'd like to take back the Presidential Traverse from, I think Jack has it now. That'd be pretty awesome. I would like to go after the New Hampshire 48 record. I have the Adirondack 46 record. So yeah, doing like the New Hampshire, all the high peaks in New Hampshire. And then maybe, I'd like to do, there's like a bike run link up in Vermont where you like bike between the 4,000 foot peaks and you run them. I think that'd be really cool. I think FKTs that have like bike run combos, would be like really exciting for me. Because like biking is a strength of mine. What else in the Northeast? Yeah, I think, and then like, yeah, like the classic, Pemi Traverse would be really cool.
Are you somebody that would ever be interested in like these like multi-day FKTs, like the Long Trail or the Appalachian Trail or the PCT, stuff like that?
Well, Long Trail is what, 3.5 days, which is like about how long it took me to do the 46er. That I was like actually trying to get to Vermont during COVID to do
that. Oh, really?
Because the Long Trail starts like 10 miles from where I live. So that's definitely on the list. As far as like the AT, PCT, month plus long stuff, it's something I've never tried. I've done adventure races that have lasted for 7 days, which always went really well. But as far as like a month long commitment, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe in a couple years.
Yeah, it seems like the trend among like at least the athletes in our sport is if you're going to go do a long trail, like a long, long trail FKT, it's typically like the swan song of your career. Like you're like in your mid to late 40s about to retire. And like, you know, that totally. No matter what happens, it's going to waste you and you weren't going to win another race anyways. Although I don't know, there's one guy, Joe McConaughey, who is definitely like a leader in that area right now. And he still stays fresh and he's, you know, relatively young. So I don't know. That's just fascinating.
I would, super interested in that kind of stuff. But also I think like more things that are more adventurous, where you're like, I'd like to do some more stuff in like in the Arctic or, things that are like more like point to point, like either historical or just really logical, cool routes. AT, PCT seems cool, but it's also like a bit of a hiking highway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you've been alluding to it like the whole episode, but, like there's a video on YouTube. I'm not sure if you've watched it. I'll link to it in the show notes. Anton Krupicka doing the Long's Peak Triathlon out in Boulder, where you start on a bike, then you run, and then you're doing a little bit of scrambling, climbing to the top of Long's Peak. And it'd be cool to see like that become more popular because, again, it just combines so many different disciplines, different motivations, skill sets. I feel like someone like you, that's like right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to do that and like things like that. FKTs are so cool, and I mean, I think the whole premise of them is kind of like becoming a little commercialized, and that's like a bit of a bummer, but there's just like you can do so much more when there's no, you know, regulations or road closures or permissions that you have to get and just go run something amazing and then make it competitive.
Okay, I got to ask you something there because you said something interesting. At what point do you think all of this outside influence in the FKT scene, like, I don't know, like what Outside Magazine has done acquiring the fastest known time website, at what point do you think that becomes like too involved and the scene is no longer as compelling, maybe free as it was before, as you preferred it?
I think it's already becoming that way. I think like there's this trend in FKTs of just like creating random meaningless FKTs just to pad people's stats, and I think it's really lame, because like what drew me to FKTs was just like just how amazing the routes were. It's like they're like gems of the area, and now it's just like here's my FKT of going up and down my driveway. It's kind of like, it just goes so against it. And I realize that, like, we're about this kind of culture of inclusion, and I'm all for that, but I'm against inclusion to the point where it, like, dilutes, like, the amazingness of what FQTs are and could be and should be. It's kind of like if you were to make, say, like, you have the triple crown of, like, long distance hiking, three trails, and they're all amazing in their own rights, but what if people just started adding to that list of trails?
Yeah.
It's like there isn't another AT or PCT out there, so it's like to just make stuff up just for the fact, just for, like, the commercialism and, like, ego boosting,
yeah,
that it is just sad, and it like, it means that, like, people like me, like whatever it was, I don't know, 6 years ago when I started doing FKTs, I would go to an area and I would look up the FKT and I would say, oh my God, there's this route. It's amazing. And then I would go run it and maybe get the FKT, maybe not. But it was, like, an amazing experience because the route was so iconic and so cool. But now, like, if that was me today, I would go and look up and there'd be, like, 50 routes in that area. And I would just pick one and then it wouldn't be the same experience because it's, like, it's not, like, one of the coolest things to do in the area. It's just, like, something that someone made up.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you're saying there. Doesn't the current FKT website try to distinguish, like, what are the most important legit FKTs in each region? Like, if you go to, like, the Northeast section, you'll see at the top 10 that they think are, like, on a pedestal, and then everything else has just been, you know, user generated and maybe not as meaningful.
Right, but I think there's a lot more than, like, 10 FKTs in North America that are, like, cool.
True.
So, like, yeah, I think they call them, like, the golds. I don't know what the term they use, but they have some term for like, their, like, super awesome routes. And I think there's only 5 or 6 or 7 of them. And it's really weird because they're, like, I think they're all in the U.S., which is, like, kind of weird. And then also, yeah, there's a lot more than 5 or 6 amazing routes that have history and have legitimacy. I think they should just, like, keep FKTs, like, the way it was. Have, like, only the best ones that, like, make sense logistically, are, like, historic or, like, super amazing. And then everything else should just get wiped off. Mm. And then they, if they want to have people going after, like, make age groups or something, make, like, an age group FKT or, like, whatever. So, like, now you can say, like, oh, I was the fastest 50 to 6 year old to do this. That means, like, everybody can, like, go and do the FKTs and, like, have an amazing time and post fast times and challenge themselves. But there isn't going to be, yeah, like, out, double out and back infinity loop of, like, whatever. It's just, like,
yeah. Yep. Well, cool. I wanted to make sure we touched on that before we got to the rapid fire round. And man, I appreciate you because I know I've been all over the place with questions and asked a ton of basic stuff, but you just came on my radar, so I had to do it.
It's all good.
Yeah, so I appreciate the flexibility. First question I have for you in the rapid fire round: what is the best advice you've ever received?
I think the best advice I've ever received was someone telling me that, like, no matter what I do at a race, that I'll still be loved and I'll still be, you know, appreciated. And I think ever since then, I've just, like, not gotten nervous about racing or about competing because it's, like, kind of puts everything in perspective.
Mm.
Like, so yeah, the advice would be no matter how you do in an event, like, your value or worth as a human, and, like, to those who love you isn't going to change.
What is something that you used to believe strongly earlier in your career that you have recently changed your mind about?
I used to believe strongly in, like, I guess, periodization and, like, overly specific training. And I've kind of changed my mind somewhat in the realm of mental state, motivation, human factors, life factors, just so many things come into play and disrupt our best intentions of creating this like ideal training plan, and it just doesn't exist.
What is the best book, movie, or podcast you have consumed recently that you think the audience would enjoy hearing about?
I really like the Trainer Road podcast. It's like a cycling podcast where they kind of talk about training and stuff, and it's just like consistently good. So
cool.
Say check that one out.
We'll link to it in the show notes. Last question. If you could put a message on a billboard for all to see, what would it say and why?
Spend more time outside. I don't think I need to explain it.
We'll make sure to link to all of your social media in the show notes, everything you mentioned in the rapid fire there too. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Great to get to know you. I'm formerly from the Northeast, so I love having these types of conversations as well. That's right. anything you want to leave the audience with or anything you want to say before we go?
No, I apologize to you for being so hard to finally pin down with my insane last few days. But yeah.
Oh yeah. We didn't even talk about the passport debacle in Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, I had my wife and I had our passports and a bunch of our gear stolen. We were down in Mexico for a race and we had brought a bunch of climbing gear to climb El Pico de Orizaba. Afterwards, someone broke into our rental car while we were racing and wiped us out pretty good. So yeah, and then we had to get home and that was quite hard.
Well, we'll have to have you on the podcast again when you decide to go all in on UTMB one of these upcoming years.
Sweet. Sounds good.
All right. Peace, brother.